Rental housing costs skyrocket in dozens of American cities, including our own. We'll tell you about it just ahead. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, a closer look at why rents in Jacksonville are rising. Get on the line now with your stories at 549-2937. Then later, best-selling author Jacqueline Woodson. It's part of today's First Coast Connect book club. Plus, a preview of a big shindig this weekend, all benefiting the sanctuary on 8th Street. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, a look at the rising cost of housing right here in our city. Now, New York and San Francisco still top the list of the costliest places to rent in the U.S. But over the last year, demand all over the country has pushed up rents by more than 20%, including in some surprising locations, including Jacksonville. So what's driving this? Well, Tim Gibbons, editor at the Jacksonville Business Journal, joins us now as we discuss why, to quote a best-selling book, the rent is too damn high. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
How are you doing today?
And many of you may have read that book. Maybe some of you haven't, but we want your calls about the rent rising in our city at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or you can comment on our Facebook page. So apartment rental site Zumper calculated rents across the country, and not surprisingly, Tim, they found that New York and San Francisco are at the top, but some surprising cities made the top 25 in terms of rent rising 20% or higher. Jacksonville squeaked into the top 25.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
I know, not the best list to be on, but we are at number 25 on this list. The median price now for a small one-bedroom apartment in Jacksonville is $870. That's a 16% spike over last year.
It is, and that if you're renting, particularly if you're new to the market, that's obviously not good. And in fact, that's one of the things over the past couple of years that has caused rents to go up is basically the number of people who are new to the market. Mm-hmm. You end up
go.
So you end up with basically post foreclosure crisis. You end up with a lot of people who lost their home and turned to rentals, which just creates more people on the market. And you have young people who basically are not in a financial position to buy a home who are now looking at renting. Again, more people looking to rent, only X number of units, more people looking for them, rents can be higher.
Lots of moving parts to this. Yeah.
There are.
Yeah, and the number to join us as we discuss why rents are going up all over the country and going up big here in Jacksonville, 549-2937. So national average rents way up from the recession lows. Owner-occupied housing prices have basically been stagnant for years. And according to Matthew Iglesias, the author of the book I mentioned, The Rent is Too Damn High, the collapse in house building is a factor because the population's been growing, but home building is only just starting to pick up again. And he writes, the only reason we have enough space for everyone to live in is that so many broke young people have moved back in or have stayed with their parents, people living with their parents or siblings who would like to start their own households. Now, though, the economy is starting to come back. These people are trying to find places to live. There's big demand for rental apartments, low vacancy rates, which keeps driving prices up.
Now, there's also a silver lining sort of thing. Well, actually, silver lining is not even the right word. Mirror image sort of thing, where we start out saying that the rents being high are a bad thing. There is, that is a bad thing if you're the renter. It's actually a good thing in some ways for the other sector of the economy, people who are actually renting those places out. Mm-hmm. One of the things that also plays into this, if you look earlier in 2015, there was a huge spate of apartment complexes trading hands. You basically had investors who were looking to make money by buying these complexes. They were fixing them up, they're investing money in them, and therefore they can charge higher rents. That's a good thing if we want more investors in the area. One of the reasons that we don't see as much building downtown, for example, is because if you can't charge high rents, it's not worth building those buildings.
Right. What do you see as the policy solutions to this? As you said, there's a positive and a negative to this, but bigger cities in this country, even medium-sized cities in Jacksonville, are trying to figure out how to grapple with this issue of creating affordable housing for that demographic of people.
There are. There's a very big issue with workforce housing, particularly when you go into the lower end of the workforce. There are efforts being made to get kind of the higher end of the workforce, the millennial kind of first, second job. But when we talk about those jobs, we're talking about people who are making a decent amount of money, maybe not a great amount of money, but decent for a 22-year-old. A lot of the policy questions that come up don't really apply to Jacksonville as much, just because we have so much land. If you're looking at a San Francisco or New York, the zoning situations there are complex and interesting and generally are seen as leading to less housing than would otherwise exist.
Right. And I don't think anyone is surprised that this list shows San Fran and New York topping the list of median rent jumping.
Read the numbers, though, of how much they actually cost.
Yeah, let's talk about it. San Francisco, most expensive apartment or home rental city in America. The average price for a one-bedroom unit in San Francisco, $3,530.
I just find that astounding. Yeah. I mean, I've lived in New York. I know high apartment rents, but just that.
Yeah. New York coming in second at $3,160 on average. Then Boston, San Jose, Washington, D.C., Oakland, California, Chicago, Miami, the only Florida city in the top 10, L.A. and Seattle. So those are the top 10. But then as you kind of head down through the list, some surprising cities are on there, like Minneapolis, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Jacksonville, Florida.
Well, and again, I'm picturing some poor person here who just had their rent hike going, what, he's talking about the silver lining.
Uh-huh.
But read that list of cities. That's not a bad list of cities to be on.
Those are all thriving cities.
Right, like everything else, supply and demand is reflected in price. And if you have more people moving here, if you have people who want to be in Jacksonville, rents are going to go up. We've talked mainly on Week in Review about that idea of people who want different things for Jacksonville. Those who don't want Jacksonville to grow are concerned about something like this. People coming in will lead to higher rents, but we have more people coming in, a more vibrant just cultural scene, more vibrant economy, rents will go up, but that also spurs more construction.
Let's go to your calls as we discuss new data showing Jacksonville is one of a group of cities where rents have skyrocketed 20% or more over the last year. This is a study looking at median rent across the 50 largest U.S. cities. 549-2937. Do you think the rent is too darn high?
You're picturing that guy, the political party guy, every time you the top hat.
Yeah, yeah. But let's go to Declan in Ponte Vedra. Declan, good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. Good morning, and thank you for choosing this topic.
Sure.
Morning. As the owner-manager of 7 rental units in various Northeast Florida locations, can you offer some resources where a landlord would go to determine what some fair rental rates are?
Declan, that's a great question. But first, let me ask you, where are your properties?
Well, they're at the beach, they're in San Marco, and in various other places in the surrounding counties.
Excellent. And how long have you been in the real estate business?
About 17 years.
Okay. That's Declan in Ponte Vedra.
I know there are some property management places nationally that do surveys to figure that sort of thing out. Quite honestly, someone with his experience and background, I probably would be asking, would be asking Declan. So,
but it sounds as though he's trying to figure out where the price point is.
Mm-hmm. It has to be hard to be a landlord where you, particularly if you care about the growth of the city, where, to some extent, particularly a small 7-unit sort of landlord can be part of the solution for workforce housing. But that's a complicated thing where, you want to get a return on your investment, but you're also trying to provide the housing the area needs.
And so where do you think he should turn?
I honestly don't have an answer.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep researching that, Declan. Email me later at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Jim in Mandarin. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering, my impression as a landlord, is that the price when the recession hit, we fell off at least 20% in our rent. So it seems to me that they haven't skyrocketed to 20%. They've just recovered to 20%. And now instead of everybody going bankrupt, they can pay their bills. Is this a correct perception?
rents did fall. It wasn't 20%, not in Jacksonville. So yes, that is part of what we're seeing on a national basis. There is a rebounding of the rates that fell during the recession. But again, it wasn't 20% here, and that type of jump, you know, on an across the board basis, say everybody got back up to where they were, Jacksonville has gone up beyond where it was. Now, it should be said, it is still by most authorities considered cheaper to buy in Jacksonville than it is to rent. That's not uncommon. That's why people buy. But Jacksonville in particular has long had a reputation for it being cheaper to buy than to rent, unless you have big HOA fees.
And realtors are tweeting the show right now. Phyllis Staines, a local realtor, tweets the show. Local realtors can provide Declan info on rental rates. Here is another tweet from a listener, Betsy. Everyone is buying. Betsy McNeil of @BetsySellsJax tweets the show. Everyone is buying. Interest rates are low. Great value for your money. Time to sell. Ask me now. So obviously, realtors are saying, look, realtors will obviously say, don't throw your money away on rent. Buy a property.
Well, it's not just throwing your money away. There's some interesting economic studies that have actually shown that's
a mixed bag.
Right. Well, but yeah. that actually in a place like Jacksonville, as rents go up, the absent large HOA fees, which like warp the thing, but the actual base cost of owning a home, that it actually is cheaper over as long as you hold it for at least 7 years. Now, if you're planning on moving, and that's the thing, we have young people moving in, doesn't you know, affect it as much. But if you're going to stay here for 7 years, buying does actually work out better.
If you can afford to buy.
Which is the problem that millennials are facing coming out. Big student loans, don't have a down payment, wages haven't increased.
Do you think the rent is too high in Jacksonville? A new study says Jacksonville is one of about 20 cities where rent has gone up nearly 20% in the last year. 549-2937. Shelley in Orange Park. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I just had a comment that it seemed when all the short sales and foreclosures were going on, that a lot of those properties were picked up by large corporate entities and then held on for rental properties. So it seems like I'm wondering if that may be a contributor to the problem as well.
Thank you, Shelley.
That is, I don't know actually if that helped raise rental rates, but she does point out something that did vastly transform the Jacksonville rental market, which was basically several big national home rental sort of places, not complexes, but people who bought up a bunch of homes, rented them out. And again, this is one of the reasons rents go up is people buy a foreclosed on home, fix it up. It's now a better property. They buy an apartment complex, fix it up. It's a better property. They can charge more.
Sure. Gail is in Arlington this morning. Hello, Gail. What are your thoughts? Hey, Gail. All right, Gail, give us a call back. 549-2937. Calls from all over town. Michelle is in Riverside. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, I just kind of wanted to respond back to the caller earlier who had the 7 rental properties. I'm a real estate agent as well for Quest Real Estate, and we specialize in property management, mostly actually in the Riverside, Avondale area. And, you can only rent the house for what it's worth, and the best thing to do is just to check the comps. I mean, you're only worth, you know, what your competition is. I always try to, obviously, you want to do a CMA just like you do on a house for sale to compare what is available and what you're up against and what's, you know, currently rented in the area. And that's obviously the price point that you want to go for. And as far as rent increasing, personally, I've noticed over the past 2 years, say like rents that were around $1,100 to $1,200 have increased dramatically. Those houses, which are, you know, higher end, have been remodeled, nicer countertops, went up for $1,400 to $1,500. Major increase in rent. And that also, too, is based on the people that are moving to Jacksonville, I think. I mean, on the higher end homes, I would say 3 out of 5 of those people are moving here for jobs. And a lot of those people are qualified to buy homes, and they are just, you know, they want to check out the area. They want to live in a house, you know, comparable to something that they would purchase. And so that's where I've seen the major increase in rents. Your average, you know, three-bedroom, two-bath home that, you know, 90s decor inside, interior-wise, still goes for around $1,000 a month. I haven't seen a major increase in that price point, but higher-end rentals definitely have gone up dramatically.
Michelle in Riverside, lots of realtors, people associated with the business, calling in this morning. Very interesting to get their insights.
It is interesting. It that intersection between buying and renting is fascinating, and hearing the voices of the people talking about how exactly you triangulate that is interesting.
Mitchell in Palatka is on the line. Hi, Mitchell. How are things down there?
Good morning. Well, the last time I paid rent, which was some nearly 20 years ago, was in Atlanta. And I got 85 acres with no building for $350 a month and basically camped out there for years. When I moved down to Palatka, I was given 3 acres of rather swampy land that all I have to pay is the tax on it each year. And I live in a converted semi-truck trailer. And I'm not connected to the web. I use solar energy for all utilities. And the only bill I get in the month, every month, is a $35 bill for my automobile. The thing is, I'm very sympathetic to the landowners and the people that are trying to rent properties at an affordable price too. But my solution is simply go it alone. You know, get on some really cheap land, put something that you can afford on it, and try to avoid these huge, huge increases. Because on a $780 Social Security, I couldn't pay rent even next door. There's a guy right next door to me that has a trailer on 1 acre of land, and he's being charged $650 a month, which to me is highway robbery.
That's Mitchell in Palatka. Hey, Mitchell, thanks for sharing your story. Interesting. Not everyone can do what he does, but that's an interesting way to go.
No, but I wonder how a solar setup works. That actually sounds fascinating.
Yeah. 549-2937, lots of calls, emails, and tweets. We also want your Facebook comments as we share details of a new market study looking at rental rates around the country. Jacksonville, surprisingly, is on the list of cities where rent has skyrocketed up nearly 20% in the last year. Let's go to Roland on the south side. Hi, Roland.
Hello. Just calling in to get some clarification. I heard there's a 7-year number thrown out there as the break point for when it becomes profitable to own. Where's that coming from?
There's a couple different economic studies, and I'm sure there are, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if people call in who, you know, who would quibble with that number. But most of the ones that I've seen basically say that if you look at the investment you have to make, you know, in a property, closing costs and then fixing stuff if it breaks or whatever, that 7 years is the point where it starts evening out.
They used to say 5 years, didn't they?
Yeah, but the rent's gone up.
Yeah, exactly. 549-2937, Don on the south side. Hi, Don.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I've kind of got a unique perspective. I'm from Boston. I've lived in Connecticut, Florida here twice, San Francisco, New York City, and San Jose. I was basically a traveling carpenter. I with union. And I got out of California when the rents doubled because of they were in a rent control situation. So I came to Florida where, you know, it was wide open. But I also lived in San Jose where I saw they were trying to improve the city. And, you know, of course, Silicon Valley was there. And then San Francisco recruited all these people. And now San Jose is a dead city. The one thing I get about downtown here is it seems like a dead city. I just don't know where the I'm retired, of course, but I don't know where are these people and why are they coming if there's not a hell of a lot of jobs here.
Yeah, that's a great question, Don. And that sort of takes us into a related discussion. Let's talk about that for a minute. Tim Gibbons.
Well, it's interesting that with your travels, you would identify downtown as the place you look at. And quite frankly, Jacksonville does not have a vibrant downtown, although large steps are being taken to make it one. But the jobs aren't downtown. They're, you know, out at Cecil Commerce Center, or they're on the South Bank, where Macquarie just said it's going to, you know, put a 85 new finance jobs. So I guess it's downtown. But it's, you know, Jacksonville is a spread out city, and it's had that issue of it doesn't have that job core center, despite the efforts so far to make it such. But you are seeing things like the 220 project over in Riverside, you know, is aimed at young people coming in to work at places like Fidelity, mm-hmm. young, fairly well-paid technical jobs that they need housing.
Right. And the 220 Riverside is designed to meet that demand. Is that an affordable complex, though, for people in that demo?
In that demo, yes. Yeah. It is an affordable complex, and that's the problem. Affordable for the you know, single parent with two kids working a minimum wage job? No. But that's not what it's aiming at. But you know, the issue with downtown of how we get more rooftops, more people actually living down there, it is actually going to involve rents going up, because that's the only thing that makes those projects worthwhile.
549-2937. Laura is in Arlington. Hi, Laura. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say I think a lot of your callers are not really representing the population that you're talking about being affected by this, which is the millennials, you know, mid-20s. And I have a master's degree, but I have a pretty low paying job, unfortunately. And, I looked for apartments in the Riverside area, and there were these, you know, converted apartments. One was a porch they had converted into a one bedroom apartment that was tiny, and they were charging $800 a month for that. And that just is not reasonable to me. And, and that's the experience I've had looking for an apartment in the Jacksonville area. And so I think that the problem is not just the issue of rising rent, but when you couple that with wage stagnation, I haven't had a raise in more than 2 years. When the rent goes up and my wages don't go up, it just doesn't add up.
Sure. Yeah, Laura, sorry to hear that. And she's certainly not alone. And as she pointed out, that's about the median rent, according to this study as well, around $800 or so for a one-bedroom apartment in Jacksonville.
It is, although a converted porch sounds egregious. But there's also the issue of expectations, where, you know, when I lived in New York, it was, of course you had roommates. That's just what you did,
right,
because you're living in New York. Where here, it's not as common of a thing. So, you know, you start playing around with that. What do you expect to get for your $800?
Yeah. Are we moving to a city where that expectation will become normalized?
And maybe not across the city, but in, you know, San Marco Riverside area, absolutely. I mean, Riverside is running out of rental places. It's just...
Yeah, and here's a tweet from a listener. Is Jacksonville a victim of its own success? More people moving in looking to rent makes the property worth more. Getting back to your earlier points.
When you mentioned Riverside, and that's Riverside's a perfect microcosm where, you know, it's an old neighborhood. Literally, all the housing stock that's going to be there is there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the hot neighborhood, people want to live there. So the caller who, you know, said $800 for a converted porch in Riverside, if she goes out to Southside, she's going to be getting more for her money, but she wants to live in Riverside because Riverside's a better place to live. So, you know, a more fun place to live or something. So if that's where you want to live, it's why rents are the level they are in New York and San Francisco. You pay a premium for that quality of life that you're looking for.
Fascinating, as always, to speak with you. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, discussing rising rents in the city, and much more still to come. Later, we'll preview one big shindig for a good cause coming up this weekend in Riverside. But up next, it's our book club, along with best-selling author Jacqueline Woodson. We're back in a moment.
Thank you. WJCT is dedicated to improving our community by empowering one of our most valuable resources, our teachers. Here's what some local teachers had to say about our fourth annual Teach Conference held last weekend.
It's been wonderful. I love the keynote speakers. Both of them were incredible.
I think I've only missed 1 year since they've had it. And every year I always use, you know, learn something that I can take back to the teachers at my school to utilize in their programs to make our program better.
It just really kind of gives us some energy to go back into the battlefield and do what we need to do for these kids.
Every one of us are going to leave here with something positive and useful for our classrooms.
Major funding for the Teach Conference is made possible by CSX Transportation, the Florida Lottery, and the Jacksonville Public Education Fund. To learn more about how WJCT assists parents, caregivers, and educators to help kids succeed, visit wjct.org/education.
On the next Fresh Air, Mary Carr, author of the memoirs The Liars Club, Cherry, and Lit. She's credited with helping to turn the memoir into a popular form. Her new book is about writing memoirs. We'll talk about writing truthfully about people you've been close to without betraying them. People like her parents, her ex-husband, and the late writer David Foster Wallace. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
What happens when you combine tequila, mariachi music, and heartache? Tijuana Moods. That's what Mingus called the best album I ever recorded. This week, Duke, Train, and Mingus take us south of the border for music that's anything but your typical Afro-Latin jazz. That's this week on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, September is here, and there's that little hint of fall, but sometimes it still feels like we're inside a terrarium, no fall leaves on the horizon, and fungus doesn't count as fall foliage. It's just another name for mold, or at least that's what our book club blogger Stacy Goldring thinks. Now, Stacy says names matter, just like the titles of books, and she's got a question. When it comes to your favorite novel, does a rose by any other name smell as sweet? That's the topic in our First Coast Connect book club today. It's all about the title. Stacy Goldring, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. This is so fascinating because as you told me, I did not realize this, The Great Gatsby was nearly titled The High Bouncing Lover.
Yeah. Yeah. You think that's going to end up bouncing off a high school bookshelf?
Yeah, I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
It also went by Among Ash Heaps and Millionaires.
Right.
Under the Red, White, and Blue. On the Road to West Egg, there were a lot of choices, a lot of choices.
The goal were these all Fitzgerald's ideas?
Fitzgerald or the publisher? And Scribner, and then they ended up here. But, you know, I like to make up words.
Yeah.
So these are called bibliomisnomers.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to go through these bibliomisnomers, and then we're going to talk about what we're going to do next month. And we'll have the library in on that, and we always thank them for helping me out by having those books on the shelves for our readers. So with Halloween coming up, what do you think this book is called? Ready?
Okay.
Dead Undead.
The Sixth Sense. I don't know.
Dracula.
Dracula!
Yeah, yeah, but they thought it sounded too much like a spoof.
Oh.
Okay? The World According to 1975. Irving, John Irving.
Oh, The World According to Garp.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Okay. The author's father suggested this title. What's That Noshing on My Lag? For this book that was originally envisioned as a comedy. Jaws.
Oh.
I know, isn't that funny? Yeah, they had almost 200 to choose from. They came up with Jaws. Okay, how about...
They did a good job with that.
Yeah,
that was the right choice.
How about Tomorrow is Another Day?
That's Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
I knew that one.
Do you know what Scarlet was originally going to be called?
I have no idea.
You're going to be so grateful. Pansy.
Pansy?
I know, isn't that awful?
She was the opposite of a
pansy. I know. A pansy cannot be a vixen. Let's make that perfectly clear.
Yeah, that just does not work at all.
Okay, so Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward's book had the working title of at this point in time.
Oh,
I know,
man.
So boring. Oh. I never would have read it. No. All the President's Men,
sure,
much better.
Okay. Especially with the movie version, Hal Holbrook in the parking garage. Oh. I mean, come on.
It's so good.
Okay, but I digress.
Okay. All right, so now we're going on to All's Well That Ends Well by Leo Tolstoy.
And that's War and Peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was it actually was released with that that title, and they realized, you know, that really doesn't capture all the you know, the sadness in this book. So they changed it to War and Peace. This is obvious. Atticus.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Correct. But Harper Lee decided the title was too narrowly focused on just one character.
So this gives you an insight into how difficult it is to come up with a good title for a story.
It's huge. It means so much because you get one chance. You only get that first chance to make a first impression when you're going looking at all those titles. So Of Mice and Men was originally known as Something That Happened.
You can name any book that.
I know.
any book could be called Something That Happened.
I know. So I was like, huh? So I went and I did a little research on this one, and Steinbeck changed it to Of Mice and Men when he read a poem called To a Mouse. And I suggest you read this poem. I'm not really like a poetry person, although on NPR this morning they were talking about it. So, okay, I'm open to that. But anyway, I had a real aha moment about Of Mice and Men when I read this poem. It was like, oh, I get it now. So you can like feel really smart and just take 5 minutes to Google To a Mouse by Robert Burns, and you'll just look very intellectual the rest of the day.
You don't even
need glasses.
Stacey Goldring.
There you go.
And if you're just tuning in, it's our first Coast Connect Book Club. Emails always go to bookclub@wjct.org. This is in partnership, by the way, with the Jacksonville Public Library. We want to give them our thanks, as always. Call us up if you have ideas about the book club at 549-2937. And so got any other brain teasers for me?
I have a few more. The Strike. This was a hefty tome that came out in 56 or 57. The author thought this gave away too much of the plot detail, and it became Atlas Shrugged at the suggestion of Ayn Rand's husband, Frank Connor. Before This Anger was the original title of a book that ended up with a much more diplomatic title called Roots, The Saga of an American Family by Alex Haley.
Interesting. So did Haley come up with Roots?
I'm not sure how that worked, but I doubt it. Because if he has a working title of Before This Anger and you end up with Roots.
Huh. Meh. That was the publisher saying.
Uh-huh. This isn't going to market. Let's try
right,
it this way,
right.
Probably. They Don't Build Statues to Businessmen was the original title of Jacqueline Suzanne's Valley
of the Dolls. Mm-hmm. Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
What on earth does that mean?
I don't know.
That's a bunch of pill pop starlets in the Coldwater Canyon
in the 70s. This is why we have editors. This is why we love all editors out there.
Exactly.
We love you. Last Man in Europe was considered too commercial for Orwell's 1984. And the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful play, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which has the best line in America's stagecraft play history, when Elizabeth Taylor walks into the kitchen and goes, What a dump.
Yeah.
What a dump. I just thought, this is why she's the queen.
Right.
This is why she gets the diamond. Anyway, when it...
Diamonds,
this is true. White diamonds. When this play premiered in Prague in the 1960s, they changed the title of the play to Who's Afraid of Franz Kafka? Why? Because Czech authorities were welcoming Kafka back into favor after previously condemning him for, quote, degenerate individualism.
So this was post Glasnost, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like post Prague Spring, post end of the Iron Curtain era.
So, you know, I think that's interesting how they can tweak a title like
that. Yeah.
And even Jane Austen's titles have been tweaked. Pride and Prejudice was originally First Impressions, and Persuasion was originally the Eliots. She passed before Persuasion was published, and it was left up to her siblings, and they chose Persuasion over the Eliots. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite books is Vladimir Nabokov's, just because I love saying that name. Okay. Was Lolita.
Lolita,
yeah.
Sure.
And it was originally called Kingdom of the Sea, and he ended up using that title in another book that he used. And for those of you who love short stories, and I was just at my doctor yesterday, yesterday, and I'm very healthy, thank you. And he was telling me he was reading The Dubliners, and he found that very difficult to read because no use of quotation marks. James Joyce just uses a dash, a lot of author that. Well, in the case
and
of
if you really want to get annoyed, you could try to read Finnegan's Wake.
But, yeah, but why?
Why make your head explode?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. That's go ahead. Okay. I'm interrupting your flow.
No worries. But that was originally called Ulysses in Dublin.
You are so fascinating that
it's
you know
so
all
fun.
Of this.
It's so fun. I don't know. I research. I write it down. I come. I show up. I have coffee. It's lovely. Let me tell you what we're going to do next month.
Okay.
Okay? Louis C.K. does this great bit about people who complain when they fly. And he goes,
isn't that like everybody?
Well, pretty much. But he says, he gives a great, I want people to think this the next time they hop on a plane. He says, you're sitting in a chair at 30,000 feet in the air, flying 600 miles an hour in the air in a chair, and you're complaining that your Wi-Fi doesn't work. Think about that.
All right.
Okay, so now I want you to visualize that.
Yeah, we're all a bunch of whiners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get there safely, okay?
Most of the time,
right.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, right. So we are going to delve into The Miracle of Flight next month by reading The Wright Brothers by David McCullough. This is nonfiction.
Very nice.
And not only is it about flight, and I watch pilots, how they talk about airplanes and flying, and they go like this. You can't see what I'm doing, but I'm like, they do angles with their hands, and they go like this, and those are their only gestures. And we're going to do more than that because it's also about the struggle of getting on the market and convincing people that what I have is a good idea. So there's a real business bent to this book as well. And if you know David McCullough, he is so readable. And what I'd like for what readers / listeners to do, and I'm so appreciative for all the feedback I get at bookclub at wjct.org. We have such wonderful, smart people listening. I would like to know, first of all, obviously, what you thought of the book. I'd also like to know about your first flight experience. Were you scared? Were you excited? Did you like dress up and wear white gloves? Did you like throw up and run to the bathroom? Where did you go? What did you think about? You know, we all, you know, because flight, yeah. Getting on an airplane used to be an event.
I know. And it's so sad that that's gone away.
I know. I would like to wear white gloves and have like a stole, okay, like fake, and like a little hat and get on the plane and have a cocktail. I would love that.
I know. I think everybody wishes it was still that way.
I know. But I do like getting on the airplane with a very thick book so no one bothers me.
Oh, always a good idea. And as you said, it's emails go to Stacy. And all of us here at the show at bookclub@wjct.org. We have a book club on the show every month. The Jacksonville Public Library is helping us with this book club. They are our partner. So next month, you can look for Stacy's pick on the shelves at the library. Mm-hmm.
The Wright Brothers.
It'll be the Wright Brothers next month. Always good to talk to you.
Same, same.
And speaking of books and authors, just this morning, Mayor Lenny Curry is kicking off the 2015 Jax Reads program. The book being read countywide this year is Brown Girl Dreaming, a New York Times bestseller by author Jacqueline Woodson. It's a memoir in verse. Now, Woodson will also be in town next month at a workshop at the Downtown Maine Library. That talk is sponsored by the local free speech coalition called BAND. I spoke with Woodson about that and her literary career.
Jacqueline Woodson, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. Lots of excitement about your appearance in Jacksonville to talk about banned censorship and free speech. I'm sure you have a lot to say when it comes to this topic, right?
I think I do. I definitely believe in free speech, and I don't believe in banned books. So it'll be great to be there and be around a lot of people who want to talk about this.
And you're leading a couple of workshops as well. What will you be talking about?
I don't know. What workshops am I doing there? Uh-oh, I should look that up. Can you tell I just got
that's okay.
From France last night.
Oh, how funny. But, you know, it's no surprise that you have so much going on. You've received so much acclaim for your writing. Most recently, your National Book Award for Young People's Literature for Brown Girl Dreaming, a memoir in verse. So I wanted to ask you, what inspired you to write Brown Girl Dreaming in that way?
Well, Brown Girl Dreaming is, as you said, a memoir, and it's about memory. And when I sat down to write it, I knew that I couldn't write it as a straight narrative because that's not how memory comes to us. It comes to us in these small moments with all of this white space around it. And I really wanted to get the visual aspect of memory on the page as well as the way it feels. And I feel like poetry is the best way to get to that deep, urgent emotion. And so that's how it ended up being that.
And when young people react to your work, what's that like for you?
It's amazing. You know, it's everything from my homework is due tomorrow. Can you answer these 10 questions for me? To your book changed my life. And I wouldn't be reading if you hadn't written this book or that book. To how can I meet you? There's a lot of love from the young community. The crazy thing about Brown Girl Dreaming is so much of the fan mail I get is from adults. And I think it's because that book, it moves across the line from young people to adults in that it tells the story of me as a child. But I think it's the story that belongs to a lot of people. And so it has this universal feel to it that I get from some of my other books, but not nearly as much as I've gotten from Brown Girl Dreaming.
Now, you grew up in South Carolina, which recently made headlines once again for issues involving the massacre of people mourning in a church, taking down the Confederate flag. What were your thoughts when you saw all of that play out?
You know, when the shooting happened in Charleston, it was heartbreaking. I think it was heartbreaking for all of America watching, hopefully. But I think for me, as someone who comes from that part of the world, it was deeply painful in that there but for the grace of God go I. And the people who were killed are people who I know, whether I know them personally, I know them as kindred spirits in that we both come from the same place. We both know what it means to feel safe in a space and then have that space massacred that way. And I think that it broke and continues to break my heart. And the work, it reminded me again how much work we as a country have to do toward creating a place where all people can be safe. And that's what I grew up in. I grew up during the Civil Rights Movement, and that's what was being fought for. And I think today it's not any different. You look at organizations like Black Lives Matter who are trying to do the same work of getting people seen and heard and made relevant in the 21st century.
How do you think the banned event, the conversation about censorship and free speech, plays into that? How does literature play a role in talking about these ideas and these struggles?
I think one great thing about a conference like this is people aren't afraid to talk about what really matters and what's necessary to create change. And I think once we get in a room with the young people and old people, and we start talking about race, and we start talking about gender, and we start talking about economics, and we start talking about sexuality, and we start talking about ageism and ableism and all the things that kind of people tend to be afraid to talk about and tend to be the things that get literature banned because people are afraid of them, then we begin to create change.
Jacqueline Woodson, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Take care.
That's Brown Girl Dreaming author Jacqueline Woodson. That's the book that's kicking off the 2015 Jax Reads program. Woodson will appear Sunday, October 4th at 2:30 p.m. at the Jacksonville Main Library. And we're back in a moment.
Relax Radio is the great American songbook, oldies and light jazz.
It's the radio station I was always looking for and never found until now.
Harry Moonbeam's home in a jar.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio.
Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Well, finally, this hour, it's set to be a real shindig this weekend in Riverside, Avondale, with a couple of events benefiting the Sanctuary on 8th Street, the local nonprofit celebrating more than 20 years of service to children in Springfield. Executive Director Vicki Watkins is here, and Karn Tucker of Biscotti's. And it's so good to see you both. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Let's start, Vicki, with there's two events we're talking about, Shindig for the Sanctuary and the Avondale 5K Classic. Let's start with the Shindig.
Okay. Well, the Shindig for the Sanctuary is our annual fundraiser. It's in September every year at the Garden Club of Jacksonville. We've had it for about 12 years now. We have great food from Biscotti's and Bono's Catering, beer and wine for the adults. And we do have a program that includes the children. We'll have our drum line and our jump rope team there. So it's a lot of fun. It's a casual affair. Tickets are $50. You can go online to the sanctuaryon8.org to get tickets, or you can get tickets at the door. And it's just a fun evening for a great cause to help kids in our community.
And so that's Friday night. And then, Karn, following that, the very next day, it's the Avondale 5K Classic.
Yes, Melissa. Thanks for having us on. Yes, it's that time of year again, September 19th. This is the seventh year we've been doing this run, and we've decided to coordinate it with the Shindig, so people can go eat lots of great carbo loading on Friday night and then come
and then
the
run it off the next day.
Yeah. So this year we have a lot of street vendors. We have yoga. We have a massage therapist there. Bold City Pops is going to be there. River City Chicks are coming with their chicks to show people how to raise chickens in their backyard. So it's really a neighborhood, family, fun, community run. And I think, as most people know, these runs are not cheap. They cost a lot of money to put on. So our sponsors, we have TD Bank, we have FNF, FIS, St. Vincent's, Sherwin-Williams, I mean, a lot of great sponsors, as well as the local restaurants, The Brick, in Avondale. And we love this run. It's always so beautiful running through Avondale. You know,
you get
to run by the river, get to see all the beautiful houses, and you can get off with your day by 10 o'clock. It's really, really great.
It's a great event, and it benefits the Sanctuary. Vicki, for people who aren't familiar with Sanctuary on 8th Street, let's explain the mission of this great organization.
Well, the mission of the Sanctuary is to help kids in need that are living in poverty in the on the east side of Jacksonville. And our programs that include an after-school program with Great Leaps Tutoring, a summer camp. We have a small homeschool. We have a program called Palettes for a Purpose. And if you come to the Shindig or the Run, you'll be able to see some of the products from Palettes for a Purpose. That is a program that employs graduates of the Sanctuary. We gather palettes, and they make furniture and art objects out of the palettes, and then we sell them. So, and we have some great products for you to see. We also this year are having local artists paint a heart that we're going to auction off. So we have quite a few of those that are just fantastic. We also send kids to Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska, and which is just a transformative experience for them. And during the summer, we send girls to Camp Montgomery down near Stark and boys to Camp Rockmont in North Carolina. So we try to enrich, encourage, help academically, and do everything that we can for kids.
Right. Karn, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say, one of the things that we want people to take away from this run is that this is a run that benefits a local establishment, a local nonprofit. So everything that we raise stays here and benefits our community here in Jacksonville. And I think that's important. I mean, there are some fabulous runs out there, but the money that we raise is really a community-driven financial aid.
Right. And people often at the last minute in Jacksonville might decide to participate. Mm-hmm. They can walk up and register that morning.
Right. Or they can go online now still with firstplaysports.com and register there. But yes, they can register the morning of.
And this is the Avondale 5K Classic kicking off bright and early Saturday at 8 a.m. at the Shops of Avondale on St. John's Avenue. And by the way, I checked the forecast. This weekend's looking good.
It is.
Yes, I know.
It's looking to be a beautiful weekend.
Yeah, we're very excited. We're very excited.
So if whether it's the run, the dinner, or both that interests you, come on out and support the Sanctuary on 8th Street. The Shindig is Friday night at the Garden Club of Jacksonville. If you've never been there, that's a great venue, by the way,
yes,
as well.
Yes, it is. A beautiful place right on the river.
Yes, just a stunning place. That's Friday, and the Avondale 5K Classic Saturday morning at the Shops of Avondale, all to benefit the mission of this city's Sanctuary on 8th Street, serving children in Springfield and the city's east side. Just go to sanctuaryon8th.org for more. Vicki Karn, so great to see you both, and have fun this weekend.
Thanks a lot, Melissa.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
That's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you have feedback or comments about the show, emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, former two-term Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley talks about his long-shot bid for the 2016 Democratic presidential nomination. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.